What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Finding the right furniture for my home can be hard, especially when I'm looking for trendy, high-quality pieces that won't break the bank. Luckily, at Bob's Discount Furniture, I can shop the latest styles and customer favorites with tons of five-star reviews, like Bob's Real Marble Elm Dining Set, which has over 600 five-star reviews, the Copper Radiance Mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you five-star sleep, the ultra-comfy Phantom Reclining Sofa, which boasts over 1,000 five-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's Sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So when you're ready to score five-star style for every room in your home at everyday low prices, listen to the smartest shoppers around and stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Before week one, I'll probably give that out.
That's a good call.
Yeah, Lamar.
And then we wait for the moment to bet the one of the big guys, one of the big boys later in the year.
Yeah, Lamar is the Bills week one and the Chiefs week four. So the fact that they're early, yeah, like his number could shrink.
Are you ready? It's time to laugh, to win, and to live the thrill of the action.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazed dogs. What the hell's going on out here?
No idea what's going on, but I am excited.
Every pick, every play, every game-changing moment. This is You Better You Bet, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas on the BetMGM network.
Hour two, You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM here on the BetMGM network. PJ Glasser alongside Jared Smith here with you on this Tuesday, filling in for Nick and Femi the entire week as those guys are off on vacation. We got Ryan Noonan coming up in about 40 minutes to join us and talk the Open Championship out at Royal Portrush. We're also going to have our guy Jake Hassan on later on in the show, talk some MLB with Jake. Colin Wilson going to join us in an hour, 5 p.m. Eastern time, talk some college football with Colin. We got SEC Media Days as well. Jared and I preview some more teams out of the Southeastern Conference. And then, of course, we got the NBC Sports Now Power Hour at the end of the show. So a lot of great stuff coming over the next 3 hours. But, Jared, let's continue talking NFL. We talked Chiefs and Jets in the last segment with the Trey Smith Sauce Gardner extension. Let's get into the San Francisco 49ers now, because Juwan Jennings has obviously wants a new contract, and he is saying that if the Niners aren't going to pay me, I want them to trade me somewhere else. And it's not ideal. I mean, it's crazy how we once looked at this San Francisco skill unit, right, with healthy McCaffrey, healthy Kittle, Debo in his prime, Ayuk, just a clinical route runner. And now it's like you look at that receiving core, especially, and Debo's off to Washington, Ayuk's coming off the ACL. Now Jennings, if they don't give him a contract, he wants out the door. Ricky Pearsall is trying to emerge as that next guy they hope. Kind of a lot of unknown in that receiving core. As great as George Kittle is, we know also how physical he is. Not getting any younger. McCaffrey's coming off the injury. So kind of the skill position weapons for San Francisco, which was once viewed as tops in the NFL. Now there's a lot of uncertainty around that coming in to the upcoming season. San Francisco, such an interesting team, Jerry, because they've been so good the last 4 or 5 years, and this past year, the injuries just kind of caught up with them. They finished last in the NFC West. Ton of moving parts in the offseason, lose a bunch of guys, especially on defense. But they come into this season, win total 10.5, and on paper, I mean, the easiest schedule in the NFL. I know you're pretty high on San Francisco for the upcoming season, so what are some things that you like about the Niners?
Yeah, I think the schedule is the obvious thing, but it's the cadence and the way that the schedule is laid out. And I think that's an important, like, when you're analyzing the schedule, and you should analyze the schedule, because I think what it does is it gives you kind of like a indicator when something might be a bet and when something might be a, hey, let's let this marinate a little bit longer. And I think the way that the Niners season starts and ends is very attractive to me. Like, the whole reason that Purdy didn't win MVP 2 years ago is because he started out hot, gangbusters, guns a-blazing, and then faltered down the stretch. And let's be honest, the awards are voted on by humans. There's a recency bias. Once Lamar beat Purdy on that Christmas night game, it was over. The race was done. And so how does Brock avoid that? Well, the last 4 weeks of the season for the San Francisco 49ers, they get a bye in week 14. Then their last four games, home against Tennessee, at Indy, prime time, Monday night, home against Chicago, Sunday night, prime time, and then home against Seattle. I mean, you're not facing Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes down the stretch, and you get two games in prime time to showcase any finishing kick for a Brock Purdy MVP campaign, which is awesome. That's why I like Brock Purdy to win MVP. I think it's a bet I'd make. And The compounding reason for that is, I guess there's two compounding reasons. One, the number of all the quarterbacks that are expected to win, right? We gave you the formula. The last eight MVPs, quarterbacks on teams that win 12 or more with a preseason win total of 8.5 or higher. Well, the Niners have a preseason win total of significantly higher than 8.5. We think they're going to win, I would say, 11 minimum. 12 feels like a comfortable number. And Purdy's a long shot right now, because of all the quarterbacks that are in that group I just mentioned, he's the long shot. He's, what, 28-1. Well, here are the first 4 weeks of the season for San Francisco. I gave you the last 4 weeks and why I think the finishing kick is there. Here's the first 4 weeks. At Seattle on opening night, or opening day. At New Orleans. Home against Arizona. Home against Jacksonville. I mean, you're staring 4-0 right in the face. And if you're 4-0 and Brock Purdy gets off to a fast start, albeit with weapons that are maybe a little bit unproven, although I'd say Christian McCaffrey's pretty proven, why is that 28-1 not going to be 10-1 after 4 weeks? Like, I to me, that's how I view this market with MVP this year. I think Mahomes and Allen and Jackson are probably, one of those guys probably going to win. But I think those numbers are going to be available. You know, you mentioned Baltimore schedule early. It's tough. Like, you know, you got to face Buffalo in there, right? Like, you got to face, or who is it? No, Kansas City's schedule is tough early. What? Yeah, you got to face Baltimore and Philly the first 4 weeks. Why am I betting Mahomes MVP before week one when they've got to go Chargers, Eagles, Ravens, three out of the first four games? I think the Mahomes MVP number is going to be available because I think they're going to drop one of those games, maybe two of those games. So if your strategy is Mahomes going to win MVP, I think you're going to have time during the season to make that bet at a reasonable price. Whereas Purdy MVP, 28-1 could be cut in half after two or three games. So it's about the not only the easy schedule they have, PJ, but the cadence of that schedule and how we try to time up when we're going to be betting these markets.
It's a great point. I mean, especially those primetime games late in the season. As you mentioned, week 16, they're scheduled to play the Colts on Monday Night Football. And then week 17, supposed to be Sunday Night Football against the Bears. Also, Jared, three of their final four games are at home. Four of their final six games are at home as well. And if you're looking for a guy to put up stats, right, we know how nice the weather tends to be out in the San Francisco Bay Area in December. So, you know, that's kind of the tough part, right? Josh Allen was able to win MVP. Lamar's been able to win MVPs. Mahomes, obviously, as well. But we know, I mean, you could be dealing with snow, cold weather, some of these games, Buffalo, yeah. Baltimore, Kansas City, December, January, so Purdy's going to have that going for him as well. San Francisco, though, I mean, the fact that they get the AFC South, they get the NFC South, And then the Niners finished in last place. So they're going to get the Giants out of the NFC East, who also finished in last place. And then in the NFC North, they're going to get the Chicago Bears, who finished in last place. So, I mean, really advantageous schedule, no question, for the 49ers. Eventually, it just felt like the injuries were going to catch up to them because of how many, you know, deep runs they have made in the postseason. Last year was that year. Everything went wrong. Made a lot of adjustments in the offseason and hoping that they can bounce back this year. I think Purdy is a really good look for MVP as well. I agree. If you were taking a long shot, I think he would be the guy. I mean, that system that he plays in with Shanahan, right? Obviously, another year in that. You got to hope McCaffrey's healthy. That takes a lot of pressure off him. You got to hope Trent Williams is healthy. I mean, there's no doubt. There's a lot of ifs with Purdy. We know he's not one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. He can be very successful. Maybe this could be his Matt Ryan year, where we never really viewed Matt Ryan as one of the two or three best quarterbacks in the league. Always thought he was really good. I'm probably higher than Purdy on most. I think he's a solid player. But yeah, if all goes right around him, then he absolutely can put up big numbers and win the MVP. NFC West is a very interesting division. Niners are the favorites, plus 160. Rams are going to be plus 185. The Cardinals are plus 450. And Seattle is plus 500. Jared, a lot of people don't really like Seattle for this upcoming season. Here's what I'll say. If Geno would have stayed in Seattle and DK Metcalf would have stayed in Seattle, I would have really liked the Seahawks. I thought that Seattle, and maybe they still do, had the potential to be this year's Minnesota, where they could be a team that comes out of nowhere and wins 13 games. A team that you never really feel like could win the Super Bowl. Like, they never strike you as that team, but they're just that team that, like, wins 12 or 13 games out of nowhere. I'm still a massive believer in Mike McDonald as the head coach. He was obviously the Ravens defensive coordinator for 2 years. I heard somebody compare him, Jared, a couple years ago as, like, defensive Sean McVay, like a genius on that side of the ball, and I really think that is the perfect comp. And now year two in that system, you know, the Ravens obviously had a great defense under Mike McDonald. They had a lot of terrific players. They won the triple crown on defense in his second year. They led the league in sacks, in turnovers, and points per game. So now that Seattle defense is going to be in year two under Mike McDonald. I think they're going to be terrific. Jared, the Seahawks last year were an awful home team. I mean, we think Seattle, we think 12th man. We think what a difficult place that is to play. They were not good at home last year. I want to say they only won like two or three home games. They were awesome on the road. So if Seattle just stays as a good road team, which they should be pretty solid with that defense, and then, you know, obviously they just do what they've done for years at home, think they could be much improved. Darnold is going to be the big question. I mean, he was so good last year, much of the year with KOC. What's he going to look like now in Seattle? Clint Kubiak takes over as the OC. Obviously, no more DK Metcalf. JSN's going to be the number one guy. Losing Metcalf as a weapon does hurt. And, you know, Seattle made moves in the offseason, which is why the prices certainly aren't as good as what they were, and why now we don't view them as what we did prior to those moves. But I think they're an intriguing last-place team. Everybody's obviously talking San Francisco. They're talking the L.A. Rams, rightfully so. Arizona could be an interesting maybe team as well. But I think Seattle is being slept on a little bit more than they should be. And I think part of it is just because I'm a big believer in Mike McDonald. We'll see if he turns out to be as good of a coach as I think he is. But I think that defense for the Seahawks is going to be really good. And obviously, if Darnold plays like he did last season, I think they could be a team that could win more games than people think.
Yeah, I think that opening week game is very intriguing. I mean, they're at home. The week one divisional home underdogs tend to be a pretty good trend. I think it's, let me see, I was looking this up the other day. I had the trend saved on Action Labs. Week one divisional home underdogs. Here you go, 27-15 ATS. Since I think the database goes back to like 2005. So again, not a ton of sample, but still a pretty damn good trend. 64% ROI, about 25%. I mean, that's exactly what you want. Let's do a more relevant sample to the last 5 years. So I'll tell you what, this is a really good trend, guys. Going back to 2018, it's 10-2 ATS. Week one, divisional home underdogs. You get a few of them on your list this week or this year. You get the Browns as a home dog to Cincy. You'll get Atlanta as a slight home dog, although they're starting to take some money because of the Wirfs injury, as a slight home dog to Tampa. I think those are the only other two, right? Chicago's a slight favorite to Minnesota, although I would not be shocked if their dogs come week one. I already bet Minnesota +1.5 in that game. I guess Detroit's a pick 'em at home against Green Bay. We'll see if they close a dog. Probably not. I would assume Green Bay won't close a dog in that game. That'll probably be around a pick 'em. So really, you know, I guess you get the Giants. You want to bet the Giants +7.5 week one? Oh no, sorry, they're at Washington. Excuse me. Those are the three. Those are the three. Seattle at home as a slight dog to San Fran. You get Tampa. Atlanta is a home dog to Tampa, and then you get that Cleveland game. So of those three divisional home dogs, odds are at least one of them. The trend says 2 out of 3 are going to cover.
Yeah.
But at least one of them are going to cover. Which one you taking? I think of those three, I would probably choose Seattle.
So it's interesting. The Niners, it feels like have played really well in Seattle the last few years.
Yes, agree.
But it also feels like a lot of those games are in prime time. You know, like it feels like that's been the Thanksgiving game. It's been the Sunday night game.
Yeah.
Like a lot of those games. So now going out there, 1 o'clock Pacific, that'll be interesting to start the year. I'm staying away from that game. I think
Atlanta's the one I'd bet. Of those three, if I had to pick one divisional home dog week one,
agreed.
I think Atlanta's the one I'd pick.
Yeah, agreed. What is the number in that game, Atlanta-Tampa?
It's now like down to 1.5. That's going to be like your teaser of the week to get Atlanta through both keys. And then to get them up to 7.5. I can already, in my mind, I've already teased Atlanta through both keys up to 7.5. But man, I think if you like San Francisco in that game against Seattle week one, I just told you the rest of the schedule the first 4 weeks. It's Cupcake City. It's New Orleans. It's Jacksonville. It's Arizona.
Yep.
I mean, they start 4-0, and then the Purdy MVP train has left the station. You know, that's a really, really favorable start to the season for the Niners if they get past the Seahawks week one.
We'll talk a little bit more about the NFC West as well. Talk some more NFL win totals here on You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM. PJ Glasser, Jared Smith, don't go anywhere.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas.
We are clear.
Cool, cool, cool.
Let's get back to You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network.
All right, we're going to have Ryan Noonan join us in about 20 minutes. Talk Open Championship here on You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM. Looking forward to that. We're going to continue talking NFL, though, here during hour number two. We're diving through the NFC West. We're talking a little Seahawks, talking a little 49ers as well. Jared, where are you on the Rams for the upcoming season?
Hi.
Team that, won the Super Bowl a couple years ago. McVay, we had that weird offseason where McVay wasn't sure whether or not he was going to come back or he was going to retire. There were maybe some rumors that Stafford was going to go to, like, the Giants. Yeah, or McVay was going to go to TV.
Yeah.
But what a draft they had a couple years ago, getting all those young defensive studs, and how those guys panned out last season really turned their defense around. They move on from Cooper Kupp. Obviously, he's been great for them, but I love the Devontae Adams pickup to go along with Puka. I think Adams in that system is going to be so good. They're +185 to win the NFC West. What would you do with the Rams for the upcoming year, 2025, 2026?
It's a good question. I don't think I'm overly high on them. Like, I'm just, I like them. I didn't make any adjustments on them after the draft. I think they deserve to be favored to make the playoffs. But the NFC is weird. Like, if you go to MGM, and you look at the odds to make the playoffs, we did a segment on the playoffs make miss yesterday. There's eight teams that are minus 115 or higher to make the playoffs in the NFC. I mean, the math ain't mathing. Like, only seven are going to make it, and eight of them are favorites, like 57% minus 115, about 55% or higher to make the playoffs. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, so if you're going to bet on an NFC team to do something positive this year, you better be pretty damn sure. Because if you're going over on wins, if you're going yes to make the playoffs, like, you're kind of betting into a market that has seven chairs and there's eight people, you know, hovering around them. Like, it's just, it doesn't seem like a bet that I'm interested in making because of just the way that the market's shaped. So just that nuance alone makes me less bullish on actually opening up my wallet and risking money on the Rams to do something positive this year, because I can make a case that they are a really good team, but the market dynamics are telling me that there's seven playoff teams in the NFC and there's eight teams favored to make the playoffs at MGM. So I'm definitely not going to bet the Rams to make the playoffs, because I feel like I'm, you know, betting into a bad situation there. You want to say that they can win the division? I think that is an argument that I'd listen to. But what did we just, like, if you know, if you're just tuning in, we just did a whole 15 minutes on why we think the Niners are going to have a great year. So if I'm bullish on the Niners, and I'm very bullish on the Niners for other reasons besides roster, I think their schedule is the big reason why. I think it's hard for me to also be bullish on the Niners. I mean, on the Rams, because it's like, well, they face each other twice, and only one of them can win the division. So am I cutting off my nose despite my face to have a positive opinion on both NFC West contenders? And if you look at the Rams' schedule, they're favored that game week one against Houston. I think they win that game. I don't really love Houston. I think they win at Tennessee week two, and then they get Philly in week three. And that's really the game that, you know, we'll find out how good this Rams team is. I think it's good that that game comes early, because it's on the road and it's outdoors, and September in Philly is much better than January, which we saw. I forget if there was bad weather in that divisional game, but
yeah, there was.
The Rams did give, I think it was snow and wind, right? Mm-hmm. Philly, January. The Rams gave them the toughest game of anyone in the playoff. So that's encouraging that they can maybe hang against Philly in that game. But again, it's on the road, it's outdoors, it's early in the year. You know, we'll see if the offense comes together quick enough, right? I love the Davante Adams signing, just like you do, but, you know, it takes time for a quarterback and receiver to build the kind of connection that Stafford had with Cooper Kupp. So I'm definitely not betting an under on the Rams. Like, I love Stafford. I think he's fantastic. I think Stafford and McVay, like, if you close your eyes and say, all right, you got to pick one quarterback, head coach, one game for all the marbles, who are you picking? I think Stafford and McVay probably pretty high on that list, maybe in the top five, maybe in the top three. But I think over the long haul of the season, you're worried about the injuries with Stafford. You're worried about, you know, the fact that they play in a division with a team that I think is better than them roster-wise, top to bottom. But I was very encouraged by Chris Shula in that defense last year. Very good. If that defense keeps improving, we might be talking more about the Rams defense than we are their offense come the second half of the year, because I think that's how you get Stafford across the finish line.
Jared, we weren't talking about it enough. Last season, the Rams in three of their four final regular season games held their opponents to fewer than 10 points. They played the Niners in week 15, held them to 6. They played the Jets in week 16, held them to 9. They played Arizona in week 17, held them to 9. And then they played Seattle in week 18, and lost 30-25. Garoppolo played in the game. It was just one of those. They already had the playoffs locked up, so they didn't need to do anything. And then they played Minnesota in the wild card round and only gave up 9 points. So you could essentially say four straight games where the Rams were trying. They had all their starters out there. They didn't give up double digits in any of those games. And they go on the road and play Philly and give up 28 in that one. Wow. So, I mean, to your point, man, Shula had those guys playing unbelievable. As those young guys got more comfortable, got more experience, they were terrific down the stretch. So I think the Rams defense is going to be a really strong unit this year. I think when you're dealing with the Rams, Jared, this is a team I would only look big picture with them. I would look at them to win the NFC. I would look at them maybe to win the Super Bowl potentially. It's one of those teams that they're really relying on like a few guys, right? And they're older guys, and if they lose them, it could get bad fast. So obviously, if Stafford gets injured, they're going to be in a tough spot. Puka is one of my favorite players in the league. He's so physical, but just it feels like every time Puka catches the ball, you're worried about him getting hurt and just, you know, hurting himself. Davante Adams is obviously getting up there in age. So the Rams are one of those teams. It just feels like at just like any point, there's danger lurking. And it's a team I'm afraid to bet anything regular season-wise because obviously the regular season, it's a grind, man. And you got to withstand injuries. And it's a team that nobody wants to see when they get in the postseason. But can they get to the postseason? That's the question with the Rams. And that's why it's a team where I would only look big picture with them. I mean, you just brought up a great point. Stafford McVay, that's a pretty darn good quarterback head coach combo. You got to win a game. Those guys are a pretty good option. Obviously, their first year together, they win the Super Bowl. And then, you know, they're in the playoffs. They go into Detroit. And that was a great game, two-point game that they lose. Then this past year, they play Minnesota, a 14-win team, dealing with all the distractions of the fires that were going on in California. Yep. They have to move the game to Phoenix, and they blow them out. I mean, they look like the 14-win team. And then to your point, they play the best team in football last season, a team that just ran through the playoffs. And the one game that was close, Rams were driving. They were in the red zone. Had they scored a touchdown, they win that game. An L.A. Dome team traveling across country to play the Eagles in weather that the Eagles want to play in, and the Rams almost beat them in that stuff. So it's just unbelievable by the Rams, what they're able to do in these playoff one-and-done type games. It's a team that nobody wants to see, and that's why I would rather just bet them to win the NFC or win the Super Bowl. I don't know if it's a team I want to mess around with the win total, make-miss playoffs, any of those kind of things. It reminds me of like the Ravens teams with Joe Flacco, Jared, where you never quite knew what you were going to get out of them in the regular season, but when Flacco got to the playoffs, he was as good as anybody. Or same thing with Eli and the Giants and those teams. We never knew what Eli would look like in the regular season. We didn't know if the Giants would get to the playoffs, but when they did, I mean, they would be a tough out every time they would get to the postseason. I feel the same way about the Rams. So that's how I would go about the Rams. I think if you're going to bet somebody in this division, I think it'd be San Francisco or Seattle, who you were talking about earlier. But big picture, I like the Rams, to be honest with you, as any team in the NFC, especially at the price that you're getting.
Yeah, and again, they're probably going to start 2-0. So you get a couple wins under your belt early. And then really, that game against the Eagles, if they beat Philly, what's the other NFC team that they have to jump over to prove that they're the best? Like, the NFC's wide open this year. Like I said, MGM's got 8 teams favored to make the playoffs in the NFC. Only 7 are making it. So there, it's a wide open conference this year. Even San Francisco and Philly, who I think deserve to be the favorites for different reasons. Philly roster, San Francisco schedule, maybe a little pedigree with the coach. But outside of that, if the Rams go into Philly week 3 and win that game, who's to say they don't deserve to be the NFC favorites after week 3? They start 3-0 with a win over the Super Bowl champs. So there's definitely a case to be made. I don't know what their number is to win the NFC. I'm assuming it's lower than the Niners.
Yeah,
definitely
9-1.
Lower than the Eagles.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you get a certain point. So like Eagles, Lions, Niners, Rams. So the fourth favorite to win the NFC.
Yep.
If they start 3-0 with a win over the Eagles, why are they not 5-1? So to me, that's where I base my, all right, I want to make a bet on a futures market early. I want that early schedule to be very favorable. Or I want an opportunity to make up some serious ground with a big-time game early in the year. I would say the Rams have both. They have 2 cupcakes. I don't want to call Houston a cupcake, but I think they win that game at home week 1. And then definitely Tennessee's a cupcake. And then you get Philly. And then the sandwich spot is Indy at home, which,
you would think is a game that they should win, but then they play San Francisco week five on a short week. Now, they do get the home game there, but let's be honest, San Francisco to LA, it's not exactly a big travel situation. So the travel for San Fran's very minimal in that spot. And if I recall, Shanahan and McVay, it's been a very one-sided rivalry over the years.
Yes, it has.
It's been very one-sided. But that's another really tricky game for the Rams. So I think – and then they play Baltimore after that. Now, they do get extra rest. And then they got to go to London. Like, the Rams have a very, very – I would call it high, low first 7 weeks. I mean, again, I think they're going to start 2-0. Let's say they're 2-1 after the game at Philly. And then let's say the Colts is a bad look-ahead spot and they drop that game to Indy. Man, now all of a sudden they're 2-2 with the Niners coming to town. And if you don't win that game, you got to go to Baltimore next week. So the season could go very off the rails or, you know, lightning, you know, stratospheric highs or terrible lows very early on. I mean, you're talking about roller coaster with those first seven games. So how they handle that's going to be very intriguing.
I mean, that's the way it was last year, right? They were 4-5 after week 10. They lost to the Dolphins at home 23-15 on that Monday night game. That was kind of Mike McDaniel, probably the biggest win of his career, honestly. They went on the road, won that game. We thought, okay, maybe the Dolphins can make a run to get the playoff spot. And then after that, they just lost one game the rest of the way when all their starters were out there. And it was that home game against Philly when Saquon just went absolutely nuts on them. But they won at New England. Yep. They won at New Orleans. They beat Josh Allen and the Bills in that insane 44-42 game. And after that game, when Allen dropped a 40-piece on them, that was the stretch where they didn't allow anybody to score double-digit points on them the rest of the way. So, you know, the Rams, that's why, Jared, and you highlighted the schedule early, why I don't really want to do anything with the regular season. Because the Rams are going to go through these highs and lows. They're going to be one of those teams that just, they don't make it easy. They're not going to be one of those teams that's going to be 10-2. They're going to always be lurking in the hunt. But if they get in, it's a team that nobody wants to see. So I think they're an interesting team and a team that maybe I would look big picture on for the upcoming season. The last one in the NFC West is going to be the Arizona Cardinals, who a lot of people love what the Cardinals did in the draft, Jared, adding some impact pieces, Walter Nolan on the defensive line, Will Johnson in the secondary. My thing with the Cardinals is Kyler Murray's got a little Joel Embiid in him. In the terms of, like, the longer the season goes, the less that I like Arizona's chances. I just don't trust Kyler to stay healthy for a full season. And if Arizona is not getting a full Kyler Murray where he can run around and scramble and play backyard football and make all his plays, I just don't see how this team can do anything of significance, right? We've seen Arizona with Kyler and Cliff Kingsbury have some incredible starts. You know, I mean, they were like 11-1 one year, right? I mean, they got off to some crazy starts. So they can win the division. They can go over their win total. I don't think those are bad bets to make. I think they're almost anti-Rams, though, where I would target Arizona regular season, fade them postseason, Rams opposite. What about you with Arizona in about 20 seconds?
I think that game week one at New Orleans is going to be one of the games that half the survivor pool gets knocked out.
Oh, yeah.
Who's picking Arizona week one at New Orleans? I mean, New Orleans is supposed to be the worst team in the league, and then they'll bounce back strong. They'll beat Carolina in week two. And then that week three game at San Francisco, that's where we'll know how good the Cardinals are.
I like where your head's at. We're definitely going to do a Survivor segment here on the show at some point this week because I like where your head's at. But we're going to talk some golf coming up. Open Championship, Ryan Noonan joins us next.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Let's get back to You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network.
Welcome back. You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM. PJ Glasser, Jared Smith here with you. Show's flying by, talking a little baseball, talking some NFL as well. We're going to talk college football to kick off our number three. Colin Wilson is going to join us. Jared and I also will dive into SEC Media Days. Kirby Smart took the podium today. So talk a little college football coming up in hour number three. But right now, we're going to talk a little golf. We got the year's final major starting on Thursday at Royal Portrush. And joining us now is Ryan Noonan. You guys can follow Ryan on X at Ryan Noonan, content manager for Bets, Betsperts Golf. Ryan, a great follow. And Ryan, we were talking off air, man. Love the Open Championship. Just the style of golf, the links style, waking up early, watching all the guys. What time do you think you're going to have the alarm set for on Thursday morning?
I got a four-year-old, Peach, that just kind of, you know, dials that up on his own. So, like, just, you know, natural alarm that comes up. So, you know, typically I will, like we were touching on too, try to get back into bed after he wakes me up randomly at 4 or 5. But for this, I'll probably just try to stay up. So when he wakes me up, he'll just be interrupting the golf instead of the sleep. Yeah, I mean, I love this. I mean, obviously a little bit of a different type of event. We were touching on, you know, just how it rates from a major standpoint. It's just different. I think we like that. I think we get probably pretty bored of this style of golf if we had to watch this, you know, for 9 to 10 months of the year, because it is kind of, you know, I don't know. I like the uniqueness of the PGA Tour and some of the tracks that we see. But I actually think that leads us into, I think, handicapping this event. We were kind of touching on it earlier, too, is I think it's kind of a unique Rota, you know, track in terms of how some of these link style courses play and are designed. I don't think this is going to be what you typically will see when we're over here in the UK. A lot of like firm and fast, use the greens. These are like large flat green surfaces. Portrush is kind of unique. We're back here pretty quickly because the players love the course, but these are elevated greens. There's not a lot of bunkering around, but there's a lot of shaved runoffs, it's, you know, somewhat resembling what we see at Augusta, where I think this really tricks the players up more so than like thick, rough aprons around the greens. But I think this is going to be more like get there through the air and more of like what you see from a standard PGA Tour event. So I don't think it's going to play like you typically see. If you're like referencing link style data or like previous Open Championships to try to make betting card decisions this week, I think you're missing the mark. I think you need to look at places that we play on the PGA Tour that have a high missed fairway penalty, that have a high rough penalty, because we have that here at Portrush. And we have a lot of that in like Florida golf. And often the missed fairway penalty there is water, but there is a missed fairway penalty, right? You cannot be playing from the water. That's pretty difficult. So I think that there are different ways to kind of handicap and look at some actually corollary courses that'll tell you a better story than four rounds once a year in the UK.
Mm. Yeah, Ryan, people always ask me what time you wake up in the morning, and I'm like, it's whatever time the dog decides to wake me up. Like that's usually I'm at the whim of whenever he wants to go out. We were talking before this, Ryan, the modeling for this course has got to be tough because we just don't get a lot of data for it, and the data that we do get is inconsistent, I guess maybe is the word I would use. Like how do you go about trying to figure out what is the right way to model for a course like this when it's a one-off event?
Yeah, one of the other tricky elements here is everyone goes off at one. So typically in a PGA Tour event or any of the other majors, you'll have you know, a group, typically, you know, some will go off at one, but they'll split them up in tee time wise. Like, all right, you got a chunk of the field is going off in the morning and the chunk in the afternoon. The Open Championship, everyone goes off the first tee, 9-minute intervals from 6 in the morning local time to like 4:30. So you just have like 10 hours of groups going off every 9 minutes. And partially, we're on the northern coast of Northern Ireland as well. It is going to be rainy air almost every day. I think Friday looks like the only day that's dry for most of it. We're dealing with like, I don't know, high 50s from a temperature standpoint, and your wind goes from like 12 to 20, depending on where you are. So that's another element in terms of handicapping. If you're pulling just off of that data alone, that sample is so noisy to begin with because it's super small. But now you just have a guy that you're making really big decisions on who just happened to be caught in a weather wave 3 years ago that you forgot about. You're like, oh, he's just not a good links player. And it's like, well, no, he played in 25-mile-an-hour sustained winds in the rain, and guys early in the day were playing in pretty calm conditions. So, using, I think there's a lot of Florida golf course comps that I think are really good. Even like Harbortown, where we play the RBC Heritage the week after the Masters. Narrow fairways, small greens. You have to club down less than driver because you can't bomb it and pick apart. Like PGA National, even Sawgrass, right? Courses where we see difficult fields where you really have to play from the fairway. Otherwise, you're kind of dead. So I think that's kind of the best way to model it versus anything that's Open Championship specific.
We're talking with Ryan Noonan here on You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM. Ryan, I've done a lot of shows with you where we've been previewing these majors, a lot of these big events, and obviously Scotty's having another terrific year. He's the favorite again at plus 500. Rory up there at plus 700, obviously a hometown event for him, being from Northern Ireland. And then you got John Rahm as well. We had Jason Sobel on yesterday. He likes Rahm a lot. Our guy Tyler Morales, big on Rahm as well. Of the big three this week, if you had to bet one, Scotty, Rory, or Rahm, who would be the guy that you would look at?
I bet Rahm as well. Good group think, I guess. I just think he should be closer to them, being at 12. Partially because there's just no holes in his game. It's another situation where from the elite guys, he's both long and accurate. Scotty is as well. But again, we have pretty different numbers from 5 to 12. Rahm is also a fantastic scrambler on and around the greens, and that's going to matter because you're small greens that are going to be hard to hit this week, and your ability to navigate, get up and down is going to be really important. Rahm also is on right now, it's perceived to be the better side of the wave. So just kind of breaking ties. Now again, weather reports on a Tuesday can be very fickle. We're talking about Northern Ireland, but right now it looks like a pretty clear advantage for the guys that are going to be playing early on Thursday. They're going to miss a little bit of that, weather and rain. And I think the biggest winds we'll see all week will be on Thursday afternoon. So Rahm's got an earlier tee time. That helps him a little bit. But really, there's no holes in the game. 65 on Sunday in Spain, almost came back. Again, he hasn't won on LIV, but he's always in the mix. He's played well in majors. He's finished T7 or better in three of the last four Open Championships. He has a good game for this style of golf as well. And I think he's obviously chomping at the bit to remind everyone that he still belongs in that top tier, upper echelon discussion of world golfers.
Yeah, I think you're the third or fourth person I've talked to this week that's been on Rahm. Obviously, one of them behind the scenes here with us, but it just seems like that is a very sharp choice this week. In terms of the top of the market, are Scheffler and Rory priced correctly? Do we see any value with any of those guys at the top? And if so, maybe it would be, a first round bet. I'm always intrigued, especially with Rory at this particular event. Always intrigues me. Scotty, it's almost impossible to bet him outright. But what are the models telling you about the tippy top of the market this week?
Yeah, so golf outrights, the hold in this market obviously is insane to begin with. So in terms of priced fair is obviously very difficult. Look, Scotty was going off at three, sub three for majors. This obviously has been the one that's been the hardest for him. But again, that's all on a curve. Scotty's still been T25 or better in four Open Championships, a couple top tens in there. And if I'm going back to how I'm handicapping, if you're telling me that this is less bump and run, use the ground, actually we're going to have to be flighted and playing from the fairway, this feels like a great spot for Scotty Scheffler at five. I'll be honest, six and change starts to become pretty interesting on Scotty. I bet myself out of that market right now by taking the Rahm position with how I allocate funds for it. But I would understand why someone would want to take a single bullet and bet Scotty. Rory's playing great golf, played well in Scotland. I think it's an interesting conversation, in terms of not only him wanting to just continue to build off of what happened early in the season and kind of turn the page off of a weird summer, doing it here I think is tough. The pressure I think he puts on himself to do it here, but I think the number's probably pretty fair. I just think that Rahm should be closer. So whether that's Rory at 750 or almost eight and Rahm closer to 10, that makes more sense to me. So I would rather, if I'm just betting one guy, you're gonna tell me one guy to win the golf tournament. Scotty Scheffler is the best golfer in the world almost by margin at this point, which is kind of wild to say considering how good Rory, Rahm, Bryson really are. But Scotty, just week in and week out, is showing up to some of these events with C game, maybe C plus game, and just top 10-ing all the time. So there's just nothing wrong with his game. So I'd imagine he top 10s again. So that'd be the way to bet Scotty if you're just kind of limping in and you want to have some Scotty exposure versus the 5-1.
Ryan, we got about 2 minutes left. Tell us some of the other guys in your car that you like this week outside of Rahm.
Yeah, deeper down the board, because swimming at the top with Rahm, you got to jump down. But some big numbers in the mid 60s on some guys that I think fit really well. Russell Henley, really nice, last year and a half. Gonna play from the fairway. kind of immaculate around the greens and on the greens, better than you think. It was in the mix very much here last year as a runner for me at like 170. Fine with paying the 60, the tax, where he's playing Sepp Straka. He's going to play from the fairway as well. No one is gaining strokes on approach at a higher clip over the last 9 months than Sepp Straka. He's just a little bit ahead of Scottie Scheffler. Might not have that ceiling, but he's playing really good golf. Some bigger numbers. Still anything north of 50 on Sepp, I think I'm fine with. Justin Thomas is a guy that people aren't really excited about. He's 60-1 in some spots. Again, he won earlier this year at the RBC Heritage at a course that is narrow, confined, where you cannot spray it off the tee. I think he has to have the same approach here. Club down. Again, the approach numbers are great, and he's a fantastic on and around the greens. That's a big number for him, too. And Hideki Matsuyama fits the same mold, basically, as Justin Thomas. They cannot find the fairway for the life of them off the tee right now. But Hideki can go out and win anywhere, and he's won at a bunch of places that I think are strong corollaries this week. 90s, 100-1 on Hideki Matsuyama, wow. Who is, I still think, is a top 20 Masters golfer in the champion. World. Insane. Masters champion. He's won it. Places like Walleye, Zozo Championship. You know, he contends in places that I think fit the corollaries for this week. So big, big numbers. I got Hideki 80 without Scotty, without Rory. So I love that in the without markets.
Ooh, I like that. I mean, Hideki's still one of the best scramblers in the world as well. So yeah. I like that look. Great numbers on them. Always great talking golf. Ryan Noonan. Give him a follow on X at Ryan Noonan, content manager, 444 Bets, Bet Spurts Golf. As well. Ryan, enjoy the Open, man. Always great talking golf with you, and catch up again soon.
You too, fellas. Get some sleeping while you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to.
You'll stay up all night. I mean, it starts at like 11 p.m. for me, so.
Yeah, I know, Jerry. You can just stay up, watch the first couple tee shots, you know, watch it, TV on. It's going to be beautiful. Love it that he also likes Russell Henley. Like that, like the Hideki look, Justin Thomas. I know I'm afraid Tyler and I are going back to the well with JT. Colin Wilson joins us next, kickoff hour number 3. Going to talk some college football.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas.